Tune into 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Durham. Pre-game at 5:20 p.m., first pitch at 5:35 p.m., with coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, Cottle Vet Clinic, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Nick Frazier here on the Tuesday morning. One thing I wanted to touch on, Derek, I meant to do it before the breaking news about J.J. McCarthy, before we get back into the joint practices and what we can expect between the Seahawks and Titans tomorrow and Thursday. Former Tennessee Titans defensive tackle Tyer Tart was released by the Miami Dolphins today. If I recall correctly, he was waived by the Titans, picked up by the Texans, signed with Miami in the offseason, and before he even plays a game for the Dolphins, he's already off the team. So as the Tennessean notes, Tart started 36 games for the Titans during a four-season span, played in 45 games during his time in Tennessee, 9 starts in 2023 before being released, 76 tackles, 2.5 sacks, and 16 tackles for loss with the Titans. But the article also mentions questions about Tart's attitude and playing effort. So it appears that, I would assume, that if he's being released before playing a meaningful game for the Dolphins, that perhaps those questions have continued to arise.
Yeah, good player, but it seems like the personality or attitude is not what NFL organizations are willing to, you know, put up with. If you are a, and I hate to even say it, Aaron Donald's name, because he doesn't have a problem with his attitude or whatnot. But unless you are a Aaron Donald type of player where your production supersedes your, you know, everything else that goes on, you can find yourself out of the league. And unfortunately for Tyer Tart, the last two seasons, he's been on three teams. And that's not a good look for a player that I think is a good nose tackle in this league. And for whatever reason, he just can't stay on anybody's team. It started here in Tennessee, and, you know, there was grumblings, you know, things coming out that, you know, things were going on, and he wasn't sort of the modeled guy in regards to the attitude. Good player, but bad attitude. So hopefully he can get with another team. And these young guys got to realize this, man. And I said this to you, Adam, off the air. You have an opportunity in this small window to do something to help yourself, to help your family, and for years down the line. And it's not just money. It's meeting people, you know, getting involved with things in the community. And because of your attitude, because you feel maybe you ain't getting what you're supposed to be getting, then you're wasting it all. I've seen too many good players, because of their attitude, they're no longer in the league, and they're mad at the world. It's as if the world did something to them or the league did something to them. No, the league, the one thing about the league is that if you're good, 99% of the time, you're going to be in it. If you're that good, you're going to be in it. What gets you out of it is injury and your attitude. That's what gets you out of it. And obviously for Tyer Tart, it hasn't been looking good for him in regards to his attitude. But I do hope he finds another team and sort of realize that, hey, listen, this may be my last opportunity to show that I can play with a good attitude, because he's a good player.
Speaking of players who signed with teams and ultimately didn't play games, Sadiq Charles, of course, abruptly retired after being signed by the Titans in the offseason. This caught my attention from Terry McCormick, coordinators talking today at Titans practice. Bill Callahan, according to Terry McCormick, said, quote, this is Terry's tweet, quote, Bill Callahan said the Sadiq Charles retirement came out of the blue, caught players, coaches, and front office by surprise, said he tried to reach out and did not hear back. Now, hopefully everything's okay with Sadiq Charles. We obviously don't know what's happening there, but, you know, it can't be good if he is ghosting the team that signed him in the offseason.
Yeah, that too is sort of unfortunate. It is unfortunate. You know, I hope that everything's okay with Sadiq Charles. Damn the team. And I mean that in all respect, but his whatever's going on with him supersedes. But he could, if there is something going on, my thing was you could have used the team as a vehicle to help rather than just completely ghost him. And listen, I don't know exactly what's going on at all, so maybe he had to. You know, I'm not going to seriously get on him from doing that, but if there is something going on, one thing I do know is that when you're in the NFL, it's easier to get the help than when you're out of it.
Yes, absolutely. So hopefully everything is okay with Sadiq Charles, who abruptly retired from the NFL after signing with the Titans in the offseason. But one of the more intriguing storylines of the Titans-Seahawks joint practices, of course, is Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs facing their former team in practice. Look, there will be no shortage of motivation in general because these are important practices for people trying to get spots on the team. And we'll talk about, you know, which players can stake a claim to a starting spot in these practices for the Titans later in the show. But Adams and Diggs particularly facing their former team in practice, what should we expect from them? I remember I was on with Teron filling in for Jared last month, and I said it's going to be must-see TV, and we'll get into this in the next segment. DK Metcalf going up against those two guys in particular, especially since DK Metcalf apparently is swinging team helmets at teammates. We'll see what happens when facing his ex-teammates. But I noticed this from Paul Kaharsky that the Titans released their next unofficial depth chart, and Quandre Diggs has been installed as a starter at safety. Brian Callahan expects Diggs and Adams to be participants in these practices. Take me into the mind of a professional athlete, Derek, facing his former team for the first time. By the way, I went back and looked yesterday. I wanted to see what your career numbers were against the Titans after you left and went to Baltimore. Do you have any idea how you did?
I know I had two touchdowns.
You definitely did have two touchdowns. And see, that you remembering that is kind of getting to my point.
Actually, I think it's three.
It says here you have two.
No, I had one in the playoffs.
Okay, this might not count the playoffs.
I had one in the playoffs, okay. One to end the game-winning touchdown from Steve McNair. Then I had another one the year prior before Steve got there where we got mollywopped when we came here. But I ended up catching a touchdown. So I had three touchdowns versus my former team.
So I believe this is regular season only. Uh-huh. You had 22 catches for 169 yards and two touchdowns in four regular season games against the Titans after you left. But see, you make my point for me. You remembered specifically the touchdowns you scored against the Titans after you left. So I want to put yourself in the shoes of Diggs and Adams and what we can expect from them facing off against their ex-teammates in practice.
Well, listen, they've circled this practice as much as they probably will tell us, no, we didn't, you know, we're just going to go in here and compete. Yeah, it's my former team, but we're competing. I'm with the Titans now. I'm not worried. No, we all go through this, okay? When you are with a team more than a year or two, when you get an opportunity to play that team, you circle that game on your calendar, because this is a guy in Adams and Diggs. I think they both got drafted. Did they both get? No. Adams got drafted by.
He was with the Jets.
Yeah, he got traded to the Seahawks. And that was a huge trade.
It was a big trade.
Yeah, big trade. So anytime you could play your former team, there's that added sort of adrenaline that's going. There's that added. It's almost like a game type situation without it being a game. You step on that field and you start to remember all those things that used to go on in Seattle, or for me in Tennessee. You know certain calls and you know players, you know their tendencies or whatnot. So you approach this as if it is a game, you know, because he's not going to play in the preseason. So these next 2 days for Quandre Diggs and for Adams are games where they want to show not just the Titans, but they want to show their former team that, hey, listen, you made a mistake by letting me go, and I'm going to show you that you made a mistake by letting me go. So this is a prime opportunity for why do you think Quandre Diggs was inserted into the lineup? I don't think the safeties played particularly well this past game anyway. I think they were a little bit timid. It could have been just, and we'll talk about what I saw on defense, but it could have been just them not knowing the defense as good. So they're kind of timid in their sort of reaction to what's going on. But I don't think the safeties played particularly well. Insert Quandre Diggs. You may get better play, but what better time to do it than when he's facing his former team? So it's going, for me, it's going to be one of those position battles that I watch. The safeties going up against the tight ends and receivers, or their receivers going up against the Titans' corners and safeties.
So they were released on the same day in March. And we know with Adams, the story in Seattle was his inability to stay healthy.
Yes.
Diggs was continued to be a productive player for the Seahawks. According to ESPN, he posted a career-best 95 tackles last season with the Seahawks, but he was getting old. Mm-hmm. You know, old, quote-unquote. He turned 31 in January and was set to count for $21.3 million against the cap in the final year of his contract. So,
wonder.
Yeah, so you're right. There should be no shortage of motivation. And this is really, you know, obviously Diggs and Adams, they've already started to ingratiate themselves into the Titans locker room, getting to know their teammates. But this is going to be really their first opportunity to say, this is why this team brought me here. Mm-hmm. And they were going to be motivated anyway. But as you said, seeing the Seahawks on the other side, seeing their ex-teammates on the other side, I mean, it's probably best case scenario for the Titans, because they know that they already knew they were going to be motivated, those mm-hmm. two players particularly. But considering the circumstances, they're going to be ultra motivated, and that's a tone setter for the Titans defense.
Yes, it is. It gives them an opportunity to go out there and play close to the brand of football, or the physicality of football that they want to play. You put a former, you know, Pro Bowl, All-Pro safety out there. Well, hell, two of them in Adams and Diggs, and then you see how your defense can truly operate, because we got to remember also, Simmons will be out there. You couple him with Devontae Sweat and then Harold Landry on the outside. So we're going to get as close of a look, real-time look, of this defense than we will get all preseason. Obviously, they didn't play. None of these guys played in the first preseason game. And I don't foresee Adams and maybe Simmons playing in many preseason games.
I think Simmons has been completely ruled.
He's gone.
Been basically,
so you're not going to see him. So this is the best opportunity you get. So if fans, I mean, if you can get out there to the Titans facility, please go, because this is the closest thing to real live game type situations, and the guys that are going to be out there. This is the closest you're going to see, other than the opening game of the season, because these guys, all of these 11 guys, are not going to be out there together against Seattle this upcoming weekend. And damn sure they're not going to be out there for the last preseason game. So if you want to see your team, the Tennessee Titans, together, this defense, and how they will look against a good offense, then you need to go to these practices, because you will see.
615-737-1025, our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We encourage your participation. If there's something you're looking forward to in these joint practices, please let us know. As I mentioned, the Diggs and Adams of it all, especially against DK Metcalf in particular, is something I'm looking forward to watching. And coming up next, we'll get into those matchups. Which matchups between the Seahawks and the Titans should we be watching most closely during the joint practices? We'll get into that next. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick, Derek Mason, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Nashville's best deal of the week is Soar Adventure Tower, where there's adventure for everyone of all ages. Get a $100 gift card for just $50 and book family fun, your next office outing, or birthday party. Soar Adventure Tower is four levels of fun with easy to difficult obstacles to choose. Plus, there's an 18-hole mini golf course. Get your $100 gift card for just $50 now at thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Nick Frazier here. So we're going to enter Derek's film room, because Derek wanted to take a look at the Titans' first team defense from over the weekend against the San Francisco 49ers in the Titans' 17-13 preseason win against San Francisco. And I remember when the Titans introduced Denard Wilson, the first thing that he was talking about was they were going to be in your face, and that their press coverage is going to be the default. And you know, the Titans didn't have a lot of takeaways last year. You know, there wasn't a lot of pressure. I felt like Denard Wilson is going to try to change all of that. At least certainly sounds that way. So, Derek, as you watched the Titans' first team defense against the 49ers on Saturday, as you went back and watched the film, what did you come away with in terms of what we should expect from Denard Wilson and his defensive unit?
Well, I mean, I think you saw just a slight glimpse of what this team wants to do. It started from the first play of the game. You had Kenneth Murray blitz the A-gap, get to the quarterback, forces the quarterback to throw earlier than what he wants to. It was a 7-yard out route to the outside. I think it was McQuarrie. He sat on it because he trusted. Again, what did I talk about last segment? Trusting, communicating, and knowing what everyone is doing. I know that Murray is blitzing. I know that in this sort of what they're running from an offensive standpoint, there should be a free runner or somebody that can account for Murray. So he should be able to get in the backfield. And if he should be able to get in the backfield, what does that do for me as a cornerback? It allows me to sit on a route because now the quarterback has to throw the ball sooner than what he wants to. And it all played out exactly like Denard Wilson wanted it to. I'm sure he wanted the sack. But what he got was equivalent to almost to a sack. He hurried the pass, and the pass went incomplete, which set up a 2nd and 10. That's what you want as a defense for them to not gain any yardage on first down. So you look at what Kenneth Murray, he was flying around. He played well. I would have loved to see that defense with Jeffrey Simmons and Harold Landry in it, but that wasn't the case. So I'm just grading it based upon what I saw from the other guys. Now, I heard Jared talking yesterday, and Jared was right. You know, from this standpoint, you know, we were told that this team was going to be aggressive in all areas. And what we saw Saturday was aggression on the front 7, but not aggression on the outside. We didn't like that last year when they would sit off 8 yards and it was 3rd and 5. It's like, what are you doing? Get up in his face. But what I would tell Jared is this. It's preseason. He's not going to show his hand because I guarantee you if he blitzes in that A-gap and you have Ladarius Sneed or Owusie on the outside, I'm more inclined to press with those guys rather than my backup guys in a preseason game that means nothing. I don't want to show what I'm going to do when I have that middle backer blitz in the A-gap. I'm not going to show that I'm going to have my corners rolled up and press them. I'm not doing any of that right now. You're going to see me do some of my stuff I want to do with vanilla coverage behind. So I would just tell Jared that take what you see from the outside standpoint with a grain of salt because that's not what you're going to see on a regular basis. It's going to be aggressive but smart and communicate. We're going to communicate across the board excessively, so much so that you may hate that we're communicating, but we're doing that. Why? Because this is a defense that is complex, a defense that loves to get to the passer. And if that is indeed the case, we got to make sure that we have help on the backside of when a guy blitz up the A or B gap. We got to have someone guarding this behind on it, you know, behind that. So the defense, it wasn't great. It wasn't bad. It was just blah, and that's what you expect of a first-team defense in preseason. You look at the corners. They play well. I think Brownlee, he had, you know, a pass breakup. He did get beat on one play. The pass was underthrown. He did get beat on the play, but he made up for it. If the pass wasn't underthrown, that maybe was a deep completion. But as it may be, the pass was underthrown. Why? Because of probably pressure in the quarterback's face. So this defense is going to go give you a little taste of what they want to do during the season with a bunch of guys that are not going to be on the front line. I'm talking about the corners on the outside and everyone beside, you know, Devondre Sweat. He was really in Arden Key. Those were really the only two, you know, starters on that front line, Kenneth Murray being another one. And I believe Jack Gibbons was out there.
I think so.
Yeah, he was out there as well. So you're getting a look at what they want to do interiorly from that front 7, but you're not getting a total assessment of what they want to do on the outside. Why? Because they don't have their 2 starting corners. So I would just advise people to pump your brakes for a bit. You saw some passes. There was a third and 12 or 13. They were playing off coverage. And it seemed like the defenders, they were a little hesitant because they didn't realize what to do or they weren't sure of themselves. Again, it's preseason. It's early on. This defense is complex. There's going to be moments where, especially in preseason, where guys look unsure and they play a little bit slower. Come the season, what you want to see is guys playing faster, which means they know the defense. So what we saw this past Saturday was an introduction to some of the things that we're going to see without the starting players that we're going to see it with.
So what do you think the ceiling for the starting defense can be? If everything clicks, and it doesn't always happen that way, players have to stay healthy, players have to meet personal expectations, you know, they have to learn this system and get it down to a science, all of those things. But when you look at the caliber of players that they have, the caliber of players they brought in, what do you feel like the ceiling for this defensive unit, the starting defensive unit, can be this season?
A top five defense. I think that's the ceiling.
Lofty expectations.
Because if you look at whether it be Greg Williams, whether it be Jim Schwartz, Denard Wilson now, all those defenses, they were great in certain areas. A lot of it was the sacks. They were up in sacks. Turnovers. You look at what Greg Williams was able to do in New Orleans. That's why New Orleans went to the Super Bowl. That's why they won the Super Bowl. Drew Brees was great, but that defense was the best defense in taking away the football. Why? Because they put pressure on a quarterback and it made him throw it earlier than what he wanted to, or they disguised their coverages so good that they fooled the quarterback. So if I've seen this from Greg Williams, if I've seen it from Jim Schwartz, I should expect the same thing, which I did see last year in Baltimore, from Denard Wilson. The same type of mentality, going after an offense, being one of the top ranked defenses in the National Football League. I'm not saying that day one they're going to start like that. As soon as the season starts, they're going to be, you know, they're going to come away with that game with five sacks, two interceptions, and look like the Bears defense from 1985. I'm not saying that. But as they figure out this defense, people, this team, this defensive unit, based upon the history, this is a Greg Williams sort of tree that Denard Wilson came off of. Schwartz came off that tree as well. What I know about those defenses is they are usually ranked in the top half of the National Football League. They're usually a top 10 defense. So I'm expecting a Denard Wilson's defense with Jeffrey Simmons, with Devontae Sweat, with Snead, Awuzie, Harold Landry, Arden Key. Hopefully Murray can, you know, really play to his level. He's a former first-round draft pick. Hopefully this year in this defense he can play more like that first-rounder than not. You have all these players on your defense. This should be a top-ranked defense. That's the way I'm looking at it, whether it be in sacks or whether it be in turnovers. This should be a top-ranked defense. And if they are in the top two or three in sacks and turnovers, this will be a playoff team.
So Teron Davenport wrote earlier this offseason about Denard Wilson's approach to playing defense, and he mentioned in the story on ESPN.com that the Titans secondary employed press coverage only 33% of the time last season, which was more than only three teams. That same unit finished last in interceptions with six. TD also mentions that as the Ravens secondary coach last year, Wilson found success once again when his unit finished tied with the Bills for the second least passing touchdowns allowed with 18. And that group rolled out press coverage a fourth best 68% of the time. So you're going from one end of the spectrum to the other in terms of the press coverage that we're expecting the Titans to employ. And L'Jarius Sneed, particularly, one of the better players in the league at pressing wide receivers. So that's something else to keep an eye on. So Tavondre Sweat had a quiet preseason debut. Yes. I think a lot of Titans fans were anticipating him to make some noise just because there's been a lot of positive press coming out of St. Thomas Sports Park about what Tavondre Sweat has been able to do in practice. The caveat, of course, in the preseason game, no Jeffrey Simmons for the Niners to worry about. So he was handling a lot of double teams, which was neutralizing him in the pass rush. What did you see from Sweat as you went back and watched the tape that gave you encouragement of what he's been able to put together so far in training camp and what he could possibly be once the season starts?
Well, the first thing is, and it should have been evident to everybody who was watching it, he played more than 2 to 3 snaps in a row. I think at one point he played like 5 or 6 snaps in a row, and then ended up coming out of the game. And this is a point of emphasis, I think, for the Titans organization or for the Titans defense, is to find out how much we can push DeVondre Sweat. Can we get him to stay in the game longer than what someone of his size usually stay? He's using preseason as another tool of conditioning. Not to say he's not in condition. He's in condition. But there's a difference between being in condition and in condition for football and hitting big fellas, you know, 99% of the time. He has to get into that condition. He has been in practice, and you see it in the game. They purposely left him in the game for that reason. And what I saw from him, I saw some good, I saw some bad, and I saw some, I think a lot of him was, like I said with the safeties, it was unsure of what exactly am I doing. He wasn't playing 100 miles per hour. You can say, well, he probably was tired. Yeah, that probably could have been a case. But even at the beginning of the game, he wasn't playing full speed. Now, he's going to push a few people back. But it still to me, seemed like he was thinking the game rather than just going out there and reacting. Now, it may be a lot different this week with Simmons on the side of him going up against the Seahawks. It might be a little bit different in practice, but I know in the game what I saw from him is a big fella that can move, that can push people around, but right now he's thinking a little bit too much about his assignment, about what he needs to do, because he's hesitant. Even on downs where I think he's fully recovered from, you know, the last 3 downs, he just seems like he's hesitating a lot. Maybe he's just trying to play like that, sort of that happy medium between getting to the passer and trying to knock down a pass, because I've seen him on several occasions do that, where he gets a push and just stops and try to jump up and back the ball down. Well, I'm not sure his vertical is that much, maybe 5 inches, if that. No, I'm just playing with your big Sweat. But he's a guy, to me, he's hesitating right now because he's still thinking about his assignment on defense. Once he gets to a point where he knows this defense, he knows his assignment like he knows the back of his hand, you will see a more aggressive individual. That's why you see aggression in practice, because practice is different than in the game. In the game, you don't want to mess up. So you're like, man, what am I supposed to do? Okay, I'm going to slow play this thing. And it seemed like he was slow playing it a few times.
615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We encourage your participation. What did you see from the Titans' first team defense in their preseason win against the 49ers over the weekend? We will continue to take your thoughts on that. Coming up next, it broke during our show yesterday, Hassan Reddick requesting a trade from the New York Jets. The Jets responded. There's also another veteran pass rusher who might be available in a trade. And, of course, whenever this happens, we always have to discuss, should the Titans be interested in either of these players? We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan, Derek Mason, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Connor in Long Island, New York. What's up, Connor?
Hey, Rich, how you doing? I'm a big Jets fan. I just wanted to take your brain on the current Hassan Reddick situation.
Yes.
Currently demanding an extension in the range of $25 to $28 million. Are you willing to pay a guy like Reddick $25 to $28 million? Personally, I am not. He hasn't shown me anything as a Jet yet.
First of all, Connor,
you're impressive.
How old are you, Connor?
I'm 13.
Attaboy. I don't know what the Jets' cap situation is. If the Jets have the space in the cap, I say do it. Aaron Rodgers not getting any younger, okay. Connor.
I really appreciate you taking my call.
Well, I'm not done with you yet, Connor. Why are you a Jet fan,
Wait,
Connor?
That bingo.
That's a very good question. So I was actually born into the fan base. My dad's a big Jet fan, but I actually had a chance to get out. 2019 game when Henry Ruggs had that, you know, Greg Williams calls an all-out blitz.
Yep.
Jets hadn't won a game.
Yep.
Henry Ruggs takes it to the house.
Yep.
My dad goes, Connor, this is going to be a long ride if you want to be a Jet fan. You have a choice. You could either stick with the Jets or choose another team. I go, all right, Dad, I'll sleep on it. Next day, I woke up. I said, Dad, I'm riding with the Jets.
When you hit the sack that
other
night, what were you thinking?
I was just thinking about it, but I was like, hey, I mean, they've been this bad for so long. You know, Rich, it's crazy to think about it. I haven't seen a playoff game in my life.
I'm 55, and I feel the same way.
Hopefully this year is the year where we can, you know, break that 13-year playoff drought and get into the playoffs with this very talented Jets roster.
Let's get that little dude on.
Yeah, that's an impressive kid. No, I don't want to have him on because he would come for all of our jobs.
Exactly.
Adam Bingham, Derek Mays, and Nick Frazier here with you. Connor, he made his choice. He made his bed. Now he has to lie in it as a New York Jets fan. It's a miserable existence, it feels like, to be a New York Jets fan. How long did he say it's been since they made the playoffs? 13 years?
Yeah, the last time I made it, I was playing. That was 2000. The last year was 2009.
That's all you had. You could have stopped the sentence.
Yep.
That's they haven't made it since I was playing.
Yep.
That's when you could have stopped
Mark
the sentence.
Sanchez.
Yep, Mark Sanchez.
And Rex Ryan.
Butt fumble.
I believe the Jets and the Buffalo Sabres are tied for the longest playoff drought, active drought, in their, you know, in North American sports. 2010 was the last time the New York Jets made the playoffs in 2010. So it's been a minute. And it wouldn't be the Jets without some sort of drama of their own making. And as I mentioned earlier on the show yesterday, the news broke that Hassan Reddick, who had been traded from the Eagles to the Jets in the offseason, was demanding a trade because he and the Jets apparently have reached an impasse in contract negotiations. That's the whole reason why the Eagles traded him to the Jets in the first place. Now, one thing that I didn't see until we were off the air was that the Jets released a statement from their general manager, Joe Douglas, that read, quote, "We have informed Hassan that we will not trade him, that he is expected to be here with his teammates, and that he will continue to be fined per the CBA if he does not report. Since the trade discussions back in March, we have been clear, direct, and consistent with our position. Our focus will remain on the guys we have here as we prepare for the regular season." Now, according to Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports, who of course joins Robbie and Rex Road every week, he wrote that as of this week, the holdout has tallied $1.7 million in fines and counting via a collectively bargained penalty of $50,000 per day that will last into the regular season. Once the regular season begins, Reddick will begin forfeiting game checks for each week missed. And Charles Robinson continues to write that, according to a source he spoke to, that source believes that Reddick could take a similar path as Chris Jones, who last year engaged in a lengthy holdout while entering the final year of a four-year deal. Jones held out for the totality of the preseason in one regular season game before agreeing on a new long-term contract with the team. The financial repercussions: Jones missed a $500,000 workout bonus, then incurred a $98,000 fine for missing mandatory minicamp and another $2 million in training camp fines. He also forfeited a $1.08 million game check. So a lot of money on the line. And I believe at the bottom of the story, Robinson writes that Reddick could be looking for a contract with an average of $25 million per season. And look, I think Reddick deserves a contract like that. I looked this up. Since 2020, Reddick has 50 and a half sacks. There are only three players in the NFL since 2020 who have more: T.J. Watt, who has 62, Myles Garrett, who has 58, and Trey Hendrickson, who has 53. Then it's Hassan Reddick at 50.5. So one of the best pass rushers in the game. It seems like it's a money thing more so than anything else. Although it should be noted that if he does suit up for the Jets, that will be the fourth team he's played for, I think, in eight seasons in the NFL. So he's bounced around quite a bit. So the question is, that's on everybody's mind whenever something like this happens. I know that Joe Douglas said in the statement, we are not trading him. I've listened to a lot of general managers say they're going to do something, and then they do the complete opposite. So if a trade presents itself that Joe Douglas can't turn down, they can't reach a contract with Reddick, I would not be surprised if Joe Douglas ultimately trades him. And the question is, of course, everybody wants to know, in Nashville, should the Titans inquire about Hassan Reddick despite what Joe Douglas said he is not being traded?
Would he help the Titans? Absolutely would help the Titans. But do the Titans have the assets to give up to get Hassan Reddick? Now, I think Hassan is upset because the Jets knew exactly before the trade or during the trade that he wanted a new contract. And it seems like everyone was sort of in agreement, of a new contract. But, you know, when that contract was due, don't know. He's upset because he feels as if the Jets went back on some of the things that, you know, he, his agent, and the organization talked about. But because he could have easily said, listen, y'all trade for me, I'm not showing up. Or he could have just said he failed a physical. He could have did it that way as well. But to his understanding, I think to his agent's understanding, and I think the Jets want to get a deal done. But they want to see what they see in Hassan Reddick. He's been in the league for a while now, and they want to get him in camp. They want to see how he meshed with this defense before they even think about giving him an extension. Does he deserve an extension? Absolutely he deserves an extension, just like those guys in front of him deserved an extension, and they got their money. Now he wants to be the next guy in line, and based upon his play, he should be. So this is a situation where I think the Jets will end up keeping him. I don't think the Titans have enough to give back in return. The Titans are swimming up water now. They're treading water now because of the things that were done prior to this regime. And again, when I mentioned the last regime, I also say that last regime did a damn good job at taking this franchise and making it, you know, a valuable franchise once again, making it a relevant franchise, an AFC AFC championship appearance. Won the AFC South twice with that regime of John Robinson and Vrabel. So as much good things they did a few things bad. And now this regime now is paying for those missed opportunities that they had in prior drafts. So I don't think the Titans have enough to give up to get a Hassan Reddick, because they got to continue to build up their roster. So if it doesn't cost a lot, where I don't have to give up a lot of draft picks, then I do it, because he's an asset to this defense, especially a defense that wants to be aggressive. But if they're asking for the moon and the stars, then I'm passing if I'm Tennessee Titans, because I'm not in a position with my organization yet to give you the moon nor the stars right now.
So the Jets traded a 2026 third-round pick, a conditional third-round pick, to the Eagles for Reddick. That could improve to a second-round pick depending on, you know, certain performances. I think there's a contingency about, you know, the number of snaps he plays, number of sacks he might get. So you would think that the Jets would want to recoup at least what they gave up to get Reddick in the first place. I listened to Jared talk about this yesterday, and there were a few conditions that Jared had on making this trade. The first was that Denard Wilson, who would have coached Reddick in Philadelphia, would have to sign off on it to make sure he's a good dude.
Exactly.
He fits in the dressing room, won't be a problem if we give him the contract that he wants. He said number two, Jared did, that the Jets would have to be willing to take a 2026 fourth round pick. Basically, he wasn't going to give him what they got. Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to give him back what they paid for. And he said they would also need to take Arden Key as well. So you get a pass rusher that you can plug in there. You get a pass rusher that you can plug in there, although, of course, Key suspended to start the season. And that the Titans will have to give Reddick more than Harold Landry is making per season, which is, according to Jared, $17.25 million. So those were the contingencies for Jared to make the trade for Reddick. A signing off from Denard Wilson, a 2026 fourth round pick in Arden Key, and the Titans would have to be willing to pay Reddick more than they're paying Harold Landry. But you're right, as I mentioned, fourth most sacks in the league since 2020. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about a guy who knows how to get to the quarterback. Hassan Reddick absolutely knows how to get to the quarterback. Another player who knows how to get to the quarterback, Matthew Judon, veteran pass rusher for the New England Patriots. A report out of Foxborough yesterday said that multiple teams have inquired about trading for Judon and his contract amid his contract stalemate with the New England Patriots, this according to ESPN. Judon is due a base salary of $6.5 million in the final year of his deal. New England made a contract offer to Judon this summer, which Judon did not accept. And you know, he has been open about his discontent with the Patriots. He feels like other players on the team have been getting paid. He hasn't. He feels as if though he has earned the right to get a new contract. I remember he and Jerod Mayo had a bit of a shouting match, I think, at one point during training camp. And then Judon missed a couple of days of camp, if I'm not mistaken. He's back on the field. Judon is, I believe, 32 years old, so an older player, but an established player, you know, a credible player who knows also how to get to the quarterback. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on Matthew Judon and where that stands with the Patriots?
I'm not sure, you know, if the Patriots don't have many good players.
No, they don't.
It would behoove them to keep the good players that they have.
Yes.
And try to sign those good players. You feel you have your quarterback in Drake May, but you know you need some defensive players as Drake May gets himself acclimated to the NFL and in your offense. You need some good defensive players to make sure teams don't score against you, because the last thing you want to do is put the weight of the franchise on a quarterback's shoulder his rookie season and him have to beat teams by scoring, you know, 25 to 30 points. No, you want to have a good defense that limit teams to anywhere from 14 to 17 points, and you believe your offense can make up the difference on that end, even with the young quarterback. So I'm not sure New England is in a place to give up good players. You know, will they sign Judon? I'm not sure. Judon's been a hell of a player. When he was in Baltimore, he was a hell of a player. He went to New England. He still has been a really good player in this league. How much is that worth as you start getting older? Now, will teams be looking to make a move for him? Absolutely. Will the Titans possibly be one of those teams? Yes. But again, just like Hassan Reddick, do you have enough assets to give in exchange for that player? Now, it may not cost you much to get Matthew Judon other than a contract and maybe some draft picks here and there, but are you in a position to even give up that, you know, as a Titan organization? I'm not sure, but he would be a added addition to a team that lost DeNico Autry last year that needs another bona fide pass rusher opposite Harold Landry. The, you know, jury is still out on Arden Key. Hopefully another year within this team and in this new defense, he'll be a much better player. The jury is still out on Kenneth Murray. Can he be that guy that the Chargers thought he could be when they drafted him in the first round? So a lot of this is predicated on whether they can get Arden Key and Kenneth Murray to play to their level consistently. If they can do that, then they don't need a guy like Judon nor Hassan Hasik. Hassan Reddick. I was thinking of Hassan Hasik.
Happens to all of us.
Yeah, happens
Chase
to all of us.
Chase said it earlier today.
Yes. But if this team doesn't prove that they got legitimate pass rushers, then they may be looking outside of this building to bring somebody in. But at that point, you know, it may be too late. Either New England has signed Judon, or they've traded him away. And the same for the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't think Reddick is going anywhere. I think he's going to stay in Philadelphia. They're going to get a deal done. But if indeed he is sort of on his way out, my thing is, do the Titans have enough for either one of these guys to give up to get them in return?
So Judon was limited to 4 games last season, but the previous 2 seasons, 2021 and 2022, played 34 games, started 31 games, 28 combined sacks in 34 games in 2021 and 2022 for Matthew Judon. 615-737-1025. Your thoughts on Hassan Reddick or Matthew Judon in a Titans uniform, although the Jets have claimed that they are not trading Hassan Reddick. I've seen a lot of general managers say a lot of things and then do the opposite thing. So although they're claiming not to trade him now, who knows what will happen, as Hassan Reddick hasn't even shown up really to the facility outside of his introductory news conference, I think. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, in order for the Titans to make the playoffs in 2024, there's a lot of things that have to go right for them. But it's also going to require teams that made the playoffs last season to take a step back. Which teams in the AFC are most vulnerable to falling out of the playoff picture, and could the Titans take advantage of that? We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan, Derek Mason, ESPN 1025-1063, The Game.